Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a guy that would like to remind us all that you never know where a Mac attack will strike. He is the captain.
Daddy Mac is going to make you jump. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today we are sipping on Coffee Red by the good folks at Sibling Revelry Brewing. Garage grade 4 out of 5 bottle caps. Coffee Red has the aroma of iced coffee and caramel follows, with a lightly roasted body and a sweetened coffee finish. And this week's beer was brought to us by our good friends. First up we have Paula in Quinn's Rocks, Australia.
And a big shout out to Anna B. in Vancouver.
Next up, let's give a cheers to Alicia in West Palm Beach, Florida.
And a big we like your jib to Karen in St. Louis, Missouri.
Next, we have Beverly sending hugs and kisses from parts unknown.
Well, that's better than giving hugs and kisses to parts unknown.
And last but certainly not least, a big cheers to Stephanie G., who listens to TCG while digitally designing teeth in Atlanta. So thanks everybody for filling up the fridge for this week's shows. If you want to help us out with next week's shows, go to truecrimegarage.com and just click on the beer fund.
Yeah, and if you'd like to support the show and get something in return, go to the store page. We got a lot of t-shirts, some hoodies, and a sticker pack coming soon. And that is enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. After the quadruple homicides and the arson, remember the police chief said publicly that the elaborate crime probably required the presence and assistance of more than one person, and that there were probably other suspects. Authorities arrested only Darren Wendt. We need to circle back to someone we discussed earlier. This is Jordan Wallace, Sava's 28-year-old personal assistant. He is a very significant part of this story. Jordan was the son of a police officer who was on active duty at the time of the Savopoulos family murders. Jordan was into race cars, and by all accounts, race car driving was his passion. He had owned his own race car and had participated in several races. Jordan met Sava in 2013 at the Autobahn go-kart race course in Jessup, Maryland. The two men bonded over their love of cars, and Sava hired Jordan in March of 2015, this is just months before the murders, to be his personal assistant after Jordan was laid off from Autobahn. Jordan told people close to him that this was his dream job. He got to drive fancy cars, travel, and make decent money.
Yeah.
Sava, as we have seen, trusted Jordan with every task, including handling $40,000 in cash on that fateful day.
Well, and plus, your boss, he was your friend before he was your boss.
But some people, including investigators, began to wonder whether Jordan could have been in on the plan to extort the family for money.
Well, he's the personal assistant, right? So he would know their whereabouts. He's been inside their home.
Yeah, and he knows the family schedule and daily comings and goings, and he certainly was aware of how much money they had.
Right.
He could very easily have been the mastermind behind the whole thing, feeding this information to Wendt or someone else. Second, he had deleted the last photo from his phone, the photo of the cash in the red bag.
Right.
He told police that he had deleted the photo right away, but actually he deleted it after the fire. There were several other photos on his phone of him inside the various luxury cars owned by the family.
Right, but he's a car guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a natural thing. I think the suspicious thing is the photo of the cash.
Well, and you probably shouldn't be taking pictures of your boss's car or what you have or these, I got a bunch of cash. Probably shouldn't take pictures of those because if that information gets out, again, these people are so wealthy that they have a target on their back for crimes like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they had some other items too that they were concerned about. One, Jordan Wallace's BMW was found on the afternoon of May 14th, parked right near the Savopoulos home. Jordan told police it was because he had driven to the house when he heard of the fire, because he was actually asked to check on the family.
Right.
The vehicle was impounded and searched.
If it was parked there, why didn't he move it afterwards?
Well, it's very likely he wasn't given the opportunity to move the vehicle.
Right.
The way this probably went down, he returns to the house. Remind you, he's been asked by his boss's company to go to the house and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They contacted him. He goes to the house and he responds back to the person that asked him to go to the home. This was Debbie Masser that we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He calls her and says, look, I'm here. The house is on fire. They're not letting me go inside. I don't know what's going on. And so I figure the way that this works is that he parks near the home. And then once they're putting out the fire and the police arrive and the detectives are there, they probably block everything off and, sorry, Jordan, but your car was right in front of the house.
Right. So, but my question is, did somebody come pick him up? Do we know this information?
No, I don't know that. One thing that they also found curious was that Jordan's father lived in the same apartment complex where Darren Wendt's sister and two of Wendt's brothers lived and where Wendt occasionally crashed.
That's pretty suspicious.
Right. According to some reports, Jordan and Wendt actually lived in the same building, or at least in very close proximity. And as you pointed out, it's quite a coincidence. Most people didn't think it could be just a coincidence.
Right.
Finally, the police stated in their affidavit for Darren Wendt's arrest that Jordan had lied to them repeatedly. He was interviewed by detectives for 4.5 hours immediately after the fire. So he likely was taken directly from the scene to be questioned immediately to figure out what's going on.
Well, and these are, some of these are little tiny lies. As law enforcement, you have to go, well, what do these little tiny lies equal to?
So some of the things that they were pretty quickly discovered to be untrue in his statements, this is where you look at these and you go, are these actual lies or just mistakes? And of course, Jordan's going to claim that these were just mistakes he made in his statements. So the affidavit says Jordan changed his account of how things with the money went down. He initially told police that he received the voicemail from Sava telling him to pick up the package on Thursday morning. We know that he actually received it on Wednesday evening, the message to do so.
Right.
He initially told police that Ted Chase handed him the $40,000 cash in a manila envelope. Actually, Ted handed Jordan 4 stacks of bills, and Jordan later placed the money in an envelope.
Right.
He initially told police that the red sports car, remember where he was supposed to deliver the money to, that he found it locked and he had to find the key in a cabinet inside the garage to open it up, when actually they were able to prove that it was unlocked. What it seems like could have been happening with these lies or misstatements, which seems somewhat inconsequential, is that Jordan told these things to police before they looked through his phone.
Right.
Once they did, they saw the discrepancies. It's possible that he was tired and stressed out and upset because his boss and friend had just been murdered.
Yeah.
And he was, afraid of how things would look or how he would look. Or as some thought, it's possible this guy was hiding something very serious.
But if you have the money and you're the mastermind and you know that they're going to be murdered, why drop off the money anyways?
That's a good question. Right, because he's the only one that we have left to tell us that the money got there. So police obviously were quite interested in Jordan Wallace. Law enforcement obtained multiple search warrants for Jordan's car, and they took possession of his phone, laptop, 2 backpacks, and various receipts and documents.
Yeah, this dirtbag and Wendt, and he has connections to the personal assistant of a major corporation. That's fishy.
Yeah, and I think the other giant red flag that we should point out here is, this is what would stand out to me as an investigator. This personal assistant that might know the routine and the comings and goings of this family better than anyone, other than maybe the housekeepers that have worked there for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Is this personal assistant, because he has intimate knowledge of what's going on. But the red flag is, you're like, this dude was only hired a few months before the murders.
Right.
It's not like this is a long time personal assistant. Now, we should point out here, Jordan completely cooperated with the investigation, even submitting a DNA sample willingly. Hold on.
He cooperated after he told him a bunch of lies.
Right. But again, we're talking, he's the first guy they're talking to after he finds out this family's been murdered.
Right.
So he cooperates, and this is per the investigators, not per Jordan Wallace. He submitted DNA sample willingly. There was gasoline that was detected in the interior of his car, which obviously does not look good. But Jordan pointed out that he worked on race cars all of the time and transported parts and gasoline in his car. The title to one of Saba's sports cars was actually found in Jordan's car. But Jordan told police part of his job was updating the registration at the DMV.
Right. And you know your days of property management and working for similar situations, that this is common practice.
One of my job duties, which didn't occur very often. Okay, so one of my job duties was to renew somebody's license, driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds like, well, how do you actually do that without being the person? There are ways if you know their personal information. And also, one of the things that I did was to renew the registration, the tags on the vehicles.
Yeah.
So let's go back to evidence, because this is a unique case where there's actually much more physical evidence than circumstantial. Given that we have Went dead to rights thanks to the pizza DNA, but we don't have much circumstantial evidence. We do have some, though. So let's go through that at this point. Because right now, they're trying to build a case against Went. We're also trying to determine who these other suspects could be. Went was identified positively by a woman who, on May 14th, saw him loitering in the parking lot of the church around 5 p.m., where minutes later, someone torched the Porsche. She described the physical appearance of a man she saw to police before they had even identified Went through the DNA. She described this person as a muscular, shorter African-American male with dreadlocks and a ponytail, wearing a white shirt, dark jeans, and a necklace. Two yard workers at the Australian ambassador's home. Think about that. Australian ambassador's home. That's how important of a neighborhood this is.
Yeah.
Located across 32nd Street from the garage side of the Savopoulos home, said that on Thursday, May 14th, they both saw an African-American male with dreadlocks wearing a white t-shirt and dark jeans with a string backpack on his back walk with purpose down the sidewalk and duck down under the still opening garage door of the Savopoulos home, or seemed to open for him and closed immediately behind him.
Right. But that seems kind of suspicious too, that this guy walks up, the door opens almost as if he has the power to open it. And then he goes inside and the door closes.
Right.
What would a personal assistant have? The garage door opener?
Right. This seems like a situation where either one of two things are happening here. Either Went is walking up to the home and an accomplice inside opens up the garage door, allows him in, and then closes it behind him, or he's walking with the garage door opener on his person.
Right, or he's timing a family member entering the garage.
So this was spotted by eyewitnesses, and this was around noon on the 14th. Now, as we discussed, Went's phone went dark, not communicating with anyone on May 13th until the evening of the 14th, the 2 days that are in question.
Right.
And in the days after the murders, Went made several incriminating searches on his phone. He searched for 10 hideout cities for fugitives, 5 countries with no U.S. extradition treaty, how to beat a lie detector test, and several searches for how to reset an iPhone. He also texted his girlfriend a photo of 2 white iPhones on the night of May 14th, exactly like those owned by Sava and Amy, and asked her whether iPhones could be tracked.
Right.
He also deleted a number of photos taken on his phone that were taken on the 13th and the 14th. And then, of course, we have, in the days after the murders, when is seen with large numbers of $100 bills on surveillance footage at these stores. Vanessa told police, remember the girlfriend,
right,
that Wendt had been wearing a hoodie that had a big red stain on it. He told her that he had cut himself. And one of the young women in the Chevy Cruze with Wendt when he was arrested told investigators that she noticed that Wendt's dreads smelled like smoke, as if he had been around a fire.
Like a bonfire, yeah, that smell you can't get rid of. But, ladies, here's a little dating advice for you. A guy comes to your place to hang out with you, maybe possibly to take you out on a date, because he did take her out to dinner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Took her to buy some things.
Mm-hmm.
He comes over. He has a hoodie with a big spot on it that's blood and says he cut himself. You go, I'm not going on that date. I'm not going.
Well, and even if you believe him, you see his mugshot on TV later and then go to a hotel with him. Now, I also wonder, though, given his violent nature that we are very aware of,
mm-hmm.
at any time was maybe she intimidated to go to the hotel, or, you know what I mean? Was she just complying with his demands?
Yeah,
for whatever reason?
Right, but when he comes in and you see this giant spot and you go, hey, sucker, is that blood? And he goes, oh, yeah, don't worry about this blood on me. I cut myself. Don't worry about a damn thing. Don't worry about that blood. What she needs to do is say, nah, I got to go get my hair done.
Right.
I got to use the restroom. I got to call the police. That's good, what you do.
Good to see you at my doorstep, bloodstain. Come on in.
Yes. This has been Dating with the Captain.
All right. So let's get to some of what I think is some of the more juicier stuff, right? So we still have this impending trial, because they're building this case against Wendt.
Right.
So Darren Wendt finally went to trial in September of 2018. This is on 20 counts of murder, kidnapping, burglary, extortion, felony murder, theft, and arson. Aggravating circumstances, which would mean that he would get life without parole, were alleged because the crimes were especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel.
Right.
Wendt pled not guilty.
Told you not to worry about that blood.
In pretrial hearings and motions, his lawyers with the District Public's Defender Service gave a glimpse into their planned defense. They said they uncovered evidence implicating someone else as the killer. Over the objections of prosecutors, the judge allowed the defense to wait until trial to publicly disclose this alternative suspect's identity.
Mm-hmm.
His attorneys had been hinting at their strategy for some time, stating publicly, Wendt, our client, lacks the intellectual capabilities to orchestrate this complicated of an operation.
Mm-hmm.
When the opening day of the trial came, prosecutors didn't hold back in their opening remarks. They described what happened. The family was held hostage, beaten, asphyxiated, stabbed, tortured, and killed by Darren Wendt. The motive, money, greed, and revenge. DNA doesn't lie, said the U.S. attorney Christopher Bruckman. And Wendt's DNA was found on the pizza, the knife handle, the construction vest, and the hard hat. Prosecuting attorneys stated that Darren Wendt was likely solely responsible for the 4 murders, and that they would prove this throughout the course of the trial, which was expected to last 8 weeks. When it came time for defense attorneys to make their opening statements, they dropped a bombshell. Everyone had anticipated that they were likely to allege Wendt had accomplices.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they alleged that Wendt was totally innocent. And in fact, his brother Daryl Wendt had been the perpetrator.
Oh, well, that makes sense. So they should just let him get out of jail.
Darren Wendt, they said, was set up by Daryl and Stefan Wendt and by Jordan Wallace.
All right, cheers, mates. Make sure you check out our old episodes exclusively on the Stitcher app and check out our weekly bonus show called Off the Record on Stitcher Premium.
So what kind of evidence was the defense going to use to show that Wendt was innocent?
Yeah, because on the surface, this does seem like a crime that would be done by more than one individual.
Well, I think what the shocker is here is not so much that we're told that other people were involved, but to be told that Wendt was innocent and he was actually set up by these other individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So first they pointed to a witness statement that reported a short-haired man driving the Porsche. Wendt had long dreadlocks. Stefan Wendt had very short hair and lived right across the street from where the Porsche was burned.
Right.
They pointed to the video of the man in the church parking lot carrying the bucket, a man whom the witness from the parking lot said was not the man she saw earlier, Darren Wendt. Remember, she describes Darren Wendt. She's also telling police, the person in your video is not the man that I saw.
Right.
And in fact, this video shows the man carrying this bucket wearing a dark hoodie, which the woman who saw Wendt in the parking lot said he was wearing a white shirt. So who was this other man? The yard workers across the street saw Wendt outside of the home, ducking under the garage door to enter the house. Clearly, Wendt had not been in the house. He had come from somewhere outside of the home. So they pointed out that someone else must have been there with the hostages and open the garage door for Wendt to enter. Defense attorneys pointed out that Daryl Wendt, the brother of the suspect, the brother of the one being tried, he had a conviction and had served time for assault with a knife. He didn't have much of an alibi for those 2 days. And Daryl had been the one to ask Chelsea to purchase money orders for him.
Yeah.
The hairs found on the hard hat and the bedding inside the home could not be attributed exclusively and with certainty to Darren Wendt. This is what the defense alleged. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, mitochondrial DNA is the same in people with the same maternal lineage.
Right.
Right? So Stefan and Darren Wendt shared a mother and would have the same profile for the purposes of the hair analysis. Never mind that Stefan had very short hair and the hairs that were found were long. Right. They left that part out.
Right.
It seems that as the trial progressed, defense attorneys decided to move away from allegations that Jordan Wallace was involved. They didn't really present anything against him, where you see them clearly pointing out things against Wendt's brothers. Now, Jordan did testify, but he testified for the prosecution, and he was considered by most to be a believable witness. He spoke tearfully of his admiration for the Savopoulos family. He said he had never met or even heard of any of the Wendts. He never had keys to the Savopoulos home or a garage access device and did not know the alarm code or how to work the system. He had only been to the house on occasion. Furthermore, experts for the prosecution testified that cell phone tracking technology put Jordan's phone at exactly the places he said he had been on the 13th and the 14th of May.
Well, good then he was scared into actually telling the truth, finally.
Darren Wendt took the stand and alleged that Daryl and Stefan had set him up. The story he told was this. You ready for a story, Captain?
Yeah.
Okay. So Darren Wendt says his brother Daryl promised him some work that day as a drywaller. So the two met up around 6 a.m. on the 13th. Daryl then told Wendt that he actually didn't have any work for him, but he needed to use Wendt's van for the day. After they had breakfast, Daryl dropped Wendt at his friend's house. This man is named Ed. But Wendt accidentally left his phone in the van, who is now with his brother. Because of this, he couldn't reach anyone all day or go anywhere. Wendt hung out with Ed all day, and they got drunk. Wendt passed out that evening and woke up the next day. At this point, he got in touch with his brother Daryl, who came to pick him up in a Porsche Turbo. They drove to the site where Daryl said he was working. This was the Savopoulos home. When they arrived, Wendt and Daryl went into the home after Daryl gave him a neon vest and hard hat to wear. Wendt didn't see or hear anyone else, but he did eat a piece of pizza that Daryl offered him. Daryl, he noted, was wearing work gloves when he handled the pizza box. Wendt said he never went upstairs in the home. He left at one point to help Daryl move the van, and when he came back, he ducked under the garage door to get in after Daryl opened it for him. He admitted that he was the man the yard workers at the Australian ambassador's home saw entering the garage. Then he said Daryl told him that he, Daryl, was going to rob the place, and Wendt wanted nothing to do with that. So he left and walked toward a bus stop. But Daryl picked him up in the Porsche, and they drove down New York Avenue. Daryl was the short-haired man wearing the neon vest spotted by a witness. Now, Daryl was bald.
Right.
Wendt also admitted that he was the man that Lori Atkinson saw in the church parking lot. He had been dropped off there to go home by Daryl after Daryl gave him two iPhones and $6,000 for the purchase of his van. He searched for how to pass a lie detector when he saw the fire and the murders on the news and realized what his brothers must have done. He had no explanation for how his DNA got on the knife handle.
Yeah, but he has explanation for almost everything else.
Right.
So maybe they just gave up at that point. Well, we did the best we could. We can't figure out the knife handle, though.
Well, so needless to say, this is quite a tale. Prosecutors were now, they have an uphill battle at this point, right? So they need to set out to work thoroughly dismantling his story with their rebuttal witnesses and evidence. So first, what they did was they showed that Daryl, the one that's been, the brother that's been implicated by Darren, who's on trial. They showed that Daryl's phone and credit card had been used to order a pizza quite a ways away in Maryland at 12:16 p.m. on the 14th.
These brothers really liked that pizza.
And Daryl and Stefan took the stand at trial. Both denied that they were ever anywhere near the Savopoulos home.
Right.
Daryl testified that Wendt should be ashamed of himself for attempting to implicate him. Prosecutors produced cell tower evidence to prove that Stefan and Daryl were, in fact, in Maryland on the days in question.
Yeah.
They produced time cards from Stefan's job at a painting company to show that he was at work that day and all day on the 14th. At least for the actual crimes that took place in the home, Daryl and Stefan, I mean, it's impossible that they were present.
Right.
And Stefan testified that Wendt had threatened his family when he was asked to leave his mother's apartment. Finally, prosecutors made sure that the jury knew that Daryl actually helped police apprehend his brother, Darren Wendt. Remember, he was traveling in that convoy, but they were able to point out that Daryl was on the phone with the arresting officers.
Yeah.
So he cooperated in the arrest of Darren Wendt. One of the final witnesses to testify in the trial in the prosecution's rebuttal was the medical examiner, who attested to the horrific injuries inflicted on the family that she viewed firsthand. The prosecutors wanted the jury to go into deliberations with the horrific images of the crime on their brains. They showed graphic and gruesome autopsy photos, including the blackened, unrecognizable remains of little Philip. They pulled Sava's bloody shirt out of a sealed evidence bag, and it smelled of decay so badly that some of the jurors looked visibly sickened. The medical examiner testified that Sava was stabbed with a large blade through the back of the neck to the front. Amy's neck was sliced in 3 quick cuts, and she had been stabbed a total of 8 times. And Philip was stabbed 3 times, including a stab wound in his lower abdomen that went almost through his body. The stabbings were on top of the brutal beatings with the baseball bat, causing multiple skull fractures and exposing the skulls. In her closing arguments, the lead prosecutor, Laura Bach, told jurors that even if they did not believe Wendt could have committed the crimes by himself, they could still find him guilty of murder if they conclude he participated. After retiring to the deliberation room with 45 pages of jury instructions on the 20 counts, the jury deliberated for 20 hours before finding Darren Wendt guilty on all counts. At Wendt's sentencing in February of 2019, the judge threw the book at him, handing down a sentence of 4 consecutive life terms with no possibility of parole. Keep in mind, D.C. does not have the death penalty. Wendt showed no emotion and had no family in the courtroom.
Well, of course he had no family in the courtroom. He blamed family members for the actual crime.
Right, right. He has no friends at this time either.
No, I don't think he had friends before this time.
So a little theory here, a little garage theory, if you will, to kind of tie everything up and how this very likely went down using the evidence that we know that was presented at trial. So it's very likely that Darren Wendt, his life was, it seemed to be in a rapid downward spiral. He had been kicked out of his mom's house. He had nowhere to live.
Right.
He had been alienated by his family members. He didn't have a job.
Well, he's violent towards everybody.
His green card was likely going to be revoked.
Yeah.
And he was going to be shipped out of the country. And his van registration was expired, and he couldn't renew it without the green card. He told his brother-in-law that he wanted to ask Vanessa, his girlfriend, to marry him, but he didn't have any money for a ring.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly what he was planning or how long he had been planning it for when he made the decision to go to 3201 Woodland Drive on that day. It seems likely that either he was out for revenge against the boss who had him fired all those years ago, or the Savopoulos were the only rich people he knew whom he could rob, right, or possibly both.
Right.
And things seemed to have gotten out of control. Wendt ended up staying in the house for almost 24 hours, a very risky move, and then killing everyone inside, even though he had gotten what he wanted, the money.
Mm-hmm.
Another question that has never been answered, as we said, is exactly how Wendt accessed the home on that day. But it's believed he watched Amy leave, cut the phone lines as soon as she left. He incapacitated Philip and Vera, put the dogs in the basement, and then waited for Amy to come home. We can only imagine what her reaction was when she walked in. Investigators believe that Wendt used threats to Philip to manipulate the parents and get them to do what he wanted. He forced Amy to make the 5:30 phone call to Sava, telling him to come home. We have to wonder whether she considered giving him any kind of signal or code word. Perhaps Wendt made her make the call on speakerphone so he could hear if there was any funny business.
Yeah.
Once Sava entered the home, he almost certainly was ambushed in the foyer, where we saw signs of a struggle and where investigators found a second baseball bat with blood on it nearby. Had Sava been able to get to his upstairs office, he would have grabbed one of the guns in the filing cabinet drawer, but that didn't happen. There remains quite a bit that we do not know. Some of the $40,000 was never found. Neither were Amy and Sava's phones.
Hmm.
Another thing that doesn't really add up is who was the other man carrying the bucket in the video? He has never been identified. He was likely helping Wendt carry gasoline to burn the Porsche, or may have just been somebody that happened to be there around that time.
Yeah.
A juror who was interviewed after the trial said that the jurors all agreed the man on the video was not Wendt and was not Daryl. Also, who was the man the witness saw driving the Porsche who had short hair, according to the witness? Was the witness just mistaken and didn't see Wendt's pulled back dreadlocks? Or was somebody else involved? But the single part of this case that both scares and saddens me the most, It seems likely that neither parent during all of those phone calls tried to signal anyone, because either they were too afraid of Wendt hurting Philip, or they really believed that if they paid him off, he would leave and they would be okay.
And that could have been his initial plan, but we're talking about a very violent individual that snaps over anything.
We will never know exactly what went down in the house during that 22-hour period between 3:15 p.m. on the 13th and the fire at 1:15 p.m. on the 14th. Of course, it's not certain that we would really want to know. As prosecutor Laura Bach said, these are the things that nightmares are made of. In the end, Darren Wendt was convicted on all 20 counts by a unanimous jury. There has never been any evidence whatsoever that Jordan Wallace was in any way involved. And investigators found no evidence that either of the Wendt brothers or anyone else was responsible for the four murders. The Savopoulos house was restored after the fire and put up for sale, but no buyers materialized. Since then, it has been demolished, leaving an abandoned lot that is a sad, empty reminder of what happened. The couple's daughters occasionally post online tributes to their parents. One post that I love is by Katarina, when she posted a quote that she attributes to her father. It reads, quote, "Who gives a shit what other people think? Let's go make some more poor decisions." The Savopoulos lived life to the fullest until Darren Wendt took it all away. How about some recommended reading here, Captain? This week we are recommending Love and Death in the Sunshine State, The Story of a Murder by Cutter Wood. Quick little description here for you. When a stolen car is recovered, it sets off a search for a missing woman, and three men are named persons of interest: her husband, her boyfriend, and the man who stole the car. Check out Love and Death in the Sunshine State, and you can find that title, along with all of our other recommendations, on our website, truecrimegarage.com.
We want to thank you so much for sharing on social media and telling your friends. Until next week.
Be good, be kind, and don't litter.